I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Kansas City has been on a tear lately. New high-rises are going up downtown. Our streetcar line is helping revitalize portions of Midtown. And a new airport terminal will eventually welcome visitors to the region. All that good news, and yet violent crime lingers as a major concern here. Many people wonder if Kansas City's building boom will ever extend east of Troost or Prospect, and gentrification threatens to displace residents in neighborhoods where it does. Addressing all those concerns and more will be the job of the next mayor. Today we'll speak with the candidates for that office and hear their thoughts on Kansas City's next 4 years. We're live from Union Station to get you up to date. And good morning and welcome to a special edition of Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We're coming to you live this morning from Union Station for a debate between the two candidates for Kansas City Mayor. They are Quentin Lucas and Jolie Justice. I think our audience today and our listeners have a pretty good sense by now of who they are. Both are lawyers, both are members of the City Council, and both, I think it's fair to say, are held in pretty high regard in this community. Let's give our candidates a round of applause, if you would. We have lots of questions for our candidates and our audience, which includes many members of the business community. They've been invited to submit questions on note cards. We'll get to many of those as we can. We want to thank the Kansas City Chamber of Commerce for hosting us here today. Let's dive right in. I want to begin by talking about the tone of this campaign. Councilwoman Justice, you have on your website, and it's been up there for a while, a message to voters in which you say point blank that you can't trust Quentin Lucas. Time and time again, you say he says one thing and does something totally different. You also say this: we can't take Kansas City's momentum to the next level if we elect an untrustworthy, ineffective mayor. This city hasn't heard rhetoric like this in a mayor's race in a long time, and untrustworthy is a big word. Why did you feel the need to say it, and do you stand by it?
You know, Steve, one of the things that we're doing right now is we are interviewing for a job. You need a mayor of Kansas City that you know their background, you know what to expect. And time again, when I'm in the community, when I'm talking to leaders, when I'm talking to business folks, neighborhood leaders, whomever it is, I'm hearing over and over again a story of someone who has not always been able to shoot straight. And so I wanted to just make sure that I showed the comparison, that I said, you know, you need a leader who is going to show up, tell the truth, and follow through. And for the last 13 years, that's what I've been doing, and that's the comparison that I put on my website.
Councilman Lucas?
You know, I don't think that that's the sort of politics that Kansas Cityans want. I'm frankly being called a liar by my opponent, which is disappointing. I don't think that's who she is. That's not the relationship we've had at City Hall. That's not what the voters want to talk about. What they want to talk about is how we come up with important solutions for the future of this city. And although she and her campaign supporters are sending lots of negative mailers showing me in a darker, grainier picture, which I think is disappointing, I think it's incredibly regrettable, I think it's distasteful, and I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if that was my campaign. So I'm not going to spend time talking about Jolie Justice's character or personality. I think she's a good person who's in it for a good reason. I think I am too, and I think I merit that level of respect. So I look forward to talking about substance, and I think if you want to see a distinction, look at whose campaign is going to be positive the entire time, and look at whose isn't.
Okay, let's talk about substance here and talk about some issues. Workforce development has become a phrase we're hearing a lot these days, this idea of preparing Kansas Cityans for the jobs of tomorrow. I'm wondering what that idea looks like to you when it comes to bolstering Kansas City's workforce and how high of a priority that would be for you should you be elected mayor. Quentin Lucas, why don't you start with that one?
You know, I think when we talk about the educational side of things, we spent a lot of time over the last year talking about early childhood education, which is certainly important. But another thing I hear from businesses all the time relates to workforce training. What are we doing to actually work not just with organized labor, our community college system, but also our high schools, to make sure that we're ensuring that we have a steady stream of folks that can be in the labor force, from someone who's a software engineer, somebody who's helping building houses, anything of that sort. So for me, workforce training means both, let's get more money into the training side, let's not, through incentives, take lots of money from the metropolitan community colleges, which is going to be a key step of how we do this. But then another step is, how can we, through things like housing policy, actually create more workforce opportunities? I've spent a lot of time talking about rehab as compared to demolition. When you demolish, you're not really training people to do anything. When you're doing rehabilitation, you're allowing lots of people to work on those homes, lots of people to rebuild the core of our city, particularly the east side, and that's the sort of work I want to see us doing in Kansas City.
Does the city, Quinton, have a role in funding workforce development, or do you want to see the community colleges, UMKC, other institutions take the lead?
You know, I think the city absolutely has a role. Step one is to make sure that we're not taking money through errant incentive ideas and others that would go to support our community college system and others. I think that is a key and important step. I think step two, I mean, we're going to talk about incentives, I assume, later. If we're giving tens of millions of dollars a year in economic development, then why can't we actually say that economic development is also training people? It's also making sure people are workforce ready and have real opportunities. So I think in the same way that we think about $15 million parking garages and other such things, we should think about how we can actually help fund more training opportunities, particularly for people from diverse groups.
Councilwoman Justice.
You know, workforce development has to be one of the many components of how we keep the city moving forward. One of the things that we have seen is that we need a balanced approach, and one of the places that we're dropping the ball is on that exact space. I have seen other cities do exciting things. I know in St. Louis, for instance, I met a young woman who's going to be graduating from high school at the same time that she receives her high school diploma. She'll have her vet tech degree. She'll be ready to go into the workforce. She'll be ready to go on and go to vet school. She can go into the animal health industry. These programs exist in the suburbs of Kansas City, but we have not done a good enough job to bring them into the core of our city. One of the things I'm excited about is I attended a breakfast last week for Kansas City Public Schools and their Education Foundation. And the experiential learning that is happening right now at KCPS is exciting. It's catalytic. And that's the exact type of momentum that we need to keep up. And we can do that through funding. We can do that through partnerships. Additionally, take a look at the development agreement, the community benefits agreement for the new KCI Terminal Airport. This is an exciting opportunity where we took the biggest infrastructure project, an economic development project that we've seen in decades, and we made sure we negotiated a deal that has a pre-apprenticeship program. Well, what does a pre-apprenticeship program mean? It means that we are going to have individuals who do not have a skilled trade, and we're going to be able to come, get that skilled training, be paid for the training, and have a guaranteed job on the other end. There is no reason why, as we move forward and do these big projects and think big, that we can't continue to fold those together. We're working with the Restaurant Association and the Lodging Association right now in conjunction with the new convention hotel, and they're creating the first ever hospitality program over at the Metropolitan Community College. These are opportunities that we can always tie to every one of our projects, and that's exactly what I'll continue to promote as the mayor.
You know, Quinton, as you get out and about around town and talk to employers, are you hearing them say and worry about worker shortages? Are we seeing certain businesses, certain industries who are lacking the workers they need to do the work they do?
Yes. I mean, all of the above. Regardless of the industry, you're hearing about worker shortages. I mean, one of the exciting things about my campaign and, frankly, my life and experience is that I've had the opportunity to navigate a lot of different worlds. I was born and raised on the east side of Kansas City. I still live there, but I get a chance to visit and explore lots of places. So yesterday I had a conversation with Cliff Illig of Cerner. I also had a conversation with a guy who's rehabbing homes in East Kansas City. For both, they were saying, we have workforce issues. For both, they were saying, we want to be able to attract a talented workforce to Kansas City. And importantly, both said, part of attracting that workforce is making sure we're paying them well, making sure we're actually giving people a living wage. And so I think all of that is something that's going to be important for the future of Kansas City.
You too, Julie.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not only do we hear it from folks who are here, but in my time as a state senator, in my time as a city council person, when we're going out and trying to attract new companies to Kansas City, they tell us a few things are barriers. Number one is the workforce. But number two is transportation and how our city is not connected, how we're not getting it right when it comes to making sure that we're getting workers to jobs, that we're getting workers to and from affordable housing opportunities. And so one of the components that we're going to have to focus on when we talk about affordable housing and workforce development and job creation is making sure that we're getting transportation right, because we're on a path moving in that direction, but we're not there yet.
You know, we're coming to you live from Union Station in the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce, so I wanted to stay on the business theme for a few more minutes. You know, when we talk about economic incentives, and there's been so much conversation in this community about incentives for businesses to move into our community, most people tend to think of larger businesses. And I'm wondering, what more can the city do to boost the prospects of small businesses, Councilwoman Justice?
You know, one of the conversations that I've been having over the last few months that's very exciting is talking about translating this momentum and the success that we've seen, you know, in pockets of the city into something that's felt at the neighborhood level. And so I've been having great conversations with folks from the EDC about how we can be much more targeted and focused on making sure that we are doing economic development not just in one pocket of town, but all over town. And so one of the things that we can do is really take a look, because we do it about every 8 years, at our EDC. And how can we take the work that we're doing there to the next level and make sure that we're focusing on small business and entrepreneurs, making sure that we're addressing innovation districts and the University Health Science District, the catalytic things that can help us continue to move. Do we need economic development incentive reform? Absolutely we do. We always need to make sure we are doing better. We are at a point in Kansas City where we must have a balanced approach, where we continue to move forward, but we make sure that we are getting more public benefit as we continue to succeed. And so those are some of the conversations I'm having about very focused economic development and tying it every step of the way to that transportation and housing component.
Councilman Lucas, small business. How can help them?
Right. I mean, I think the first step is, when we talk about how we encourage and how we incentivize small business, we can't just keep doing the same thing in economic development. We can't just keep doing the same thing in business attraction. In Kansas City, Missouri, we have continued to look, in some ways almost exclusively sometimes, at the home run projects. We think that only the biggest employer sometimes can be the thing that transforms a community. But as all of us know, it's that small business between 2 employees and 15. It's those people with ideas that are already in our community are the ones that we really need to grow. And so what I encourage us to do is actually rethink incentives generally. It can't just be a real estate-based abatement. We can't do the same thing that we were talking about in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s. We need to think about how, with abatements, redirections to economic activity taxes, sales taxes, etc., can we actually make sure that we're making opportunities for smaller developers, smaller builders, small business owners to actually build and grow in Kansas City. And there's one more thing. We cannot create these high barriers to entry for people who are trying to start businesses. I've been blessed to serve the 3rd District, the east side of Kansas City. The number of people who come to my office all the time and say, "Brother Lucas, I have an idea. Can you help me with it?" Right? And they say, "I've talked to the EDC, the Economic Development Corporation. I've tried to talk to some other group, and they weren't helpful." What we need to make sure is that we actually are helpful. We're creating more opportunities, and instead of telling people no, or you need more capital, or you need to partner often with a business in another part of the city, we need to actually lay out the red carpet for their ideas. We need to say, "We're encouraging you." The way to rebuild Prospect, Van Brunt, South Kansas City so much is actually to trust the people who are there now and encourage and grow their businesses.
You're listening to a live debate from Kansas City's Union Station on KCUR's Up to Date. A question from our audience, and we've gotten several along these lines. Many employers struggle to retain employees because they can't get to jobs or they spend more on transportation than housing. How can the city better connect housing, transportation, and jobs? Been lots of studies done that showing there's a disconnect between our transportation system, our bus system, and getting people effectively to work. Councilwoman Justice, how would you address that?
Well, one of the things that's very exciting that's happening right now is the work that our Kansas City Area Transit Authority is doing. And if you haven't taken a moment to visit the Kansas City Area Transit Authority website, I want you to do that, because right now they've got a program out there, a survey, talking about what's next in Kansas City. Where do we need our transportation lines? What does transportation look like moving forward? And we are having conversations in a very, very critical way that we have not had before. Through their work, they have also been able to bring actual free transit service to significant portions of our city, to our schools, to our veterans. This is something we can continue to amplify. It's something that we can do together. So we are already in conversations with the business and civic community about how we need to get this right, how it is one of the biggest barriers of not only retaining the workforce that we have, but making sure that we get people to and from their jobs, customers to small businesses, and then also making sure that we're attracting the next generation of employees and employers in Kansas City. And so how do we do that? This is a hard one. We're going to have a regional conversation. We're going to have to have a regional conversation about how we move around this city and this region, because right now we are fundamentally not getting people to where they need to be when they need to be there. And so I look forward, because this is a conversation we've already started. This is actual work that's already being done, to making sure that we move that idea forward and work towards a time where we can have free transit for everybody throughout our entire community.
Jolie, do you sense that other communities on the western side of the state line are ready to have the conversation you just talked about?
You know, those conversations are tough, Steve, and the reality is there's a lot of times when people don't want to have the conversation. But I do know that there are employers all over this city, all over this region, both east and west of the state line, who need more workers. And I also know that we have a lot of workers who live in KC Mo, in the heart and the center of our city. And so I am confident that if we get together, that we can come up with solutions. We've done it before. This is something that is not new. When we've come together on community issues, we've been able to resolve them. It's not easy, but if you bring everybody to the table, even the most polarizing voices, you're going to be able to get somewhere.
Quentin Lucas, how can we better connect Kansas Cityans to jobs via the city bus system?
So, you know, this may be a place where we disagree. I don't want to talk about what's next. I want to talk about what's now. I want to talk about the challenge that actually exists in Kansas City, Missouri, fixing first what we're doing wrong, which there are several things, and I'll talk about them. And then second, actually talking about our regional conversation. On the what's now point, and this is something that I've experienced throughout my entire life. My mother, I've told you before, was a single mother who caught the bus with three kids under 5 years old, and that was the only way we got around. That's never left me. My sister catches the bus, sometimes to the Jackson County Courthouse. She lives on the east side. And then I have a nephew who's 19 who catches the bus into downtown for work and doesn't get paid that well doing it. So what can we do better? Step one, we need to work with KCATA to actually better fund east-west bus routes. We spend so much time talking about the MAX bus system, the streetcar, all well and good, all north-south. You know, what about the person who lives on the east side on 39th Street and has the job at KU Hospital at 39th and State Line? How can we get more routes that get them going back and forth? And we need to do that on 27th, 39th, 47th, 63rd, right? That's the sort of thing, in the Northland, frankly. We need to make sure that we're actually investing in better bus routes. To me, it's not just about a conversation. It's about how do you get people to work, right? How are you getting those better bus routes now? In terms of the regional conversation, we actually always have regional conversations. The problem is that we actually need people to just say, look, we need to actually fund it. Right? Right now, what we're not doing is saying to enough of our other jurisdictions, particularly our friends in Johnson County, Kansas, that you have a significant workforce that is catching the bus all the time. We need KCATA to make sure it is funding access to opportunities for them. I don't want to just sit down and say, hey, we have a region, let's all connect, right? But instead, what I want us to do is say, we've got need, demonstrated need now. If you want us investing in to the same extent we do as Kansas City, Missouri taxpayers in KCATA, you need to pay up as well and make sure that we can get people to work every day. That's a conversation that's happening with KCMO and KCK and has been happening for years. We need to add other jurisdictions into that conversation.
You know, Councilman Lucas, east-west bus lines seems like a no-brainer to me. Why don't we have them today, more of them today?
Yeah, we have them today. I think one of the biggest challenges is when we were last dealing with You know what? I'm going to go even broader because we're all among friends, and I'm just going to be straight up honest. Kansas City has a huge issue with East-West, if you haven't noticed, right? We have an issue with race. We have an issue with bridging lines, right? And so, and we experienced this because my sister was cutting the bus, and then when budget cuts came in the late 2000s during the financial crisis, her bus that got her from Blue Ridge into downtown was one of the first that was on the chopping block. Right? And so I think the problem is one that's actually fairly historical. I think it's one that says, well, you know, 39th isn't as big or as prominent as Maine. And I think we need to fundamentally reshift it. And we need to think about transportation, ladies and gentlemen, as how do we get people to work, right? How are we helping the poorest people in Kansas City get access to opportunities and to different communities? That's what we need to talk about. We need to be pro-equity, right? We need to get past our racial divisions. And I think that plays a large role in our transportation, our education, and everything about this city.
Jolie, do you share that belief that racial tensions might be a factor in why we don't have more east-west bus lines?
I think it's racial tension. I think it's racial discrimination. I mean, without question. I mean, the reality is that our city is segregated racially, economically, and it was done so decades and decades ago by intentional policies. And it's going to take intentional policies to make sure that we revert, and not revert, because it was never that way. It's going to take intentional policies to fix these systemic issues. And one of the things I'm excited about is that's exactly what the KCATA is doing right now. Check out what the KCATA is doing. We are actually, and this is a very exciting time, coming up with innovative solutions to make sure we're addressing these long-term issues. And that conversation is ongoing, and it's happening now.
I want to turn our conversation to incentives with a couple of questions here. I think, Councilman Lucas, you've addressed this a little bit already, but I think it's so important I want to go back to it, about the things you would do to encourage businesses to move east of Troost. Give me 3 points in a Quentin Lucas plan. What do you have in mind?
Step one, right, you need to actually stop giving away the whole farm west of Troost. And so I think one of the things that I try to do in my incentive reform policy, where when we talk about collaboration, I talk to 14 public school superintendents, I talk to the Chamber of Commerce, I talk to the county, we came to an agreement. We came to an agreement that the greatest incentives should only be available, with a few exceptions, but should only be available in the east side or in severely economically distressed parts of the city.
Does that mean you would turn off the spigot downtown, Councilman?
I would strongly limit it, yes.
I mean, no more incentives downtown during the Quentin Lucas administration?
You know, I won't say no more, Steve, but what I will say is when we're considering a luxury hotel or we're considering, right, some other project that isn't actually building and creating more equity in our community, we should say no. You know, the problem is when Jolie and I showed up on the city council, we were still at a time when we were often considering and granting maximum incentives on the Country Club Plaza. It had gone too far. What we need to do is actually, one, make sure that we are, I think, channeling the greatest support and the greatest incentives in East Kansas City or in areas that have the most demonstrated poverty long term. I think the second point that we need to do is actually not just think about incentives as something that helps the big developer, right? But instead think about incentives as things that actually help the small builder, the person who has a few houses, the person who actually has an idea. You know, when I've talked to business folks, I've bumped into people at the corner of 30th and Indiana who say, hey, we're trying to build up things here and improve it. They don't have tens of millions of dollars. They don't have $1 million. But what can we do to actually help them? So one is actually true incentive reform and a commitment to it. Two is actually looking beyond just the largest developers. And then I think three, the final point simply is, what are we doing to actually stimulate the business environment in our community? A part of that, like the greatest incentive, can be making it easier for someone to do business with Kansas City. I think that is an important step we need to do every step of the way. And in particular, in areas and in communities where you haven't often had great access to capital, the east side, where you often haven't had banks that are talking to you about how to open a business, right? Those are the things I want to see. And that is what I think truly an incentive and encouragement for new businesses to grow are.
Jolie Justice, your plan for east of Troost.
I think one of the things, and I mentioned this before, that we need to move and shift towards is using our EDC for more focused economic development in areas that have been disinvested, in areas where we have not seen development. We talk a lot about north-south in this community. That is absolutely true. It is time to start making really connections between the East and the West and connecting those areas that we've already incentivized, that are already booming. Making sure, though, every step of the way that we are doing this on transit lines and that we are doing it near housing opportunities where people can actually afford to live and work all in the same space. And we do that through using our EDC not just to review economic development plans from big developers, but really going and focusing and going after businesses and innovative ideas. Right now, we're looking at some really interesting things. The innovation districts that we're talking about can be catalytic for small businesses. We need to make sure that we're including with those, and so this is the next point, make sure we're including within those incubators for minority-owned businesses and small and disadvantaged businesses so that we're giving the tools that are necessary to small business owners so that they can thrive within their own neighborhoods. Third, we need to make sure that we're focusing on procurement practices in our city that are diverse and inclusive and actually promoting, making sure that we are supporting not just small businesses, but frankly, black and brown businesses, women-owned businesses, disadvantaged businesses, individuals who have not been able to get the bonding that they need, the funding that they need. And so if we put those things together and we've started to do it with certain community benefit agreements, we can make sure that we're doing that moving forward on all of our big projects. So focused economic development and changing policies.
Would you turn off the spigot in downtown Kansas City?
Downtown Kansas City is the heart of our city. Kansas City started in downtown Kansas City, and we need to make sure we are creating jobs throughout this community. And one of the things we need to do is make sure that we are incentivizing in such a way moving forward that is not giving away the farm. I agree with it. No, I would never say turn off a spigot to anywhere. That would not be a balanced approach. Instead, what I would say is, let's make sure we're focusing our economic development on areas of the city that need it most. But if we have an opportunity to create high-paying jobs downtown, if we have an opportunity to bring people into and out of downtown as part of the incentive, then we need to make sure that we're continuing to create those opportunities. Let me give you one quick example. Just east of downtown, in what is considered the downtown area, we have a steel plant that the Port Authority owns right now. There are conversations going on right now about making high-paying jobs on a transit route next to downtown. Would I want to cut off a spigot and then cut off that project? Absolutely not.
Okay, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're coming to you from the boardroom of the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce, downtown Kansas City. We're visiting with the two candidates for Kansas City Mayor. They are Quentin Lucas and Jolie Justice. Another question from our audience, from James. What is your perspective on Cordish Company's proposal to build affordable, quotes around that word, units as small as 315 square feet for as much as $750 a month? And would you live in a micro unit yourself, Councilman Lucas?
No, I don't think I would live in a micro unit. I haven't thought about that, but no. I've been critiqued for this. You know, we have an ordinance in committee right now about percentage affordability inside housing units. I was actually the one who got past our first ordinance that required affordable units to be part of any incentivized housing project. What was the problem? The city had different definitions of affordability. So some apartment builders were saying affordable is $1,600 a month. We got that cut down by $600. That was still way too much. And right now we have an ordinance that, frankly, I think is still a little too high. And we're trying to make sure we come up with a solution that says both. You need to have units that are at or below a certain number. Right now the ordinance endeavors to have it $800 or below. But there's a size requirement on all those units as well. You can't just have the 300-square-foot apartment and then say, well, yeah, it's $700 and that's all good. So my view is, no, that's not truly affordable. There's another concern I have with that proposal, and it's the fact that that proposal came out of the Three Light project, and they said, well, we don't want to necessarily build affordable units in our building. We'll just put the affordable units in another separate building. It's like some sort of housing apartheid. And I don't actually think you need such a thing, right? When we say percentage affordability within the building, it is that you have access to the same door, the same amenities, all the same stuff that the taxpayers are subsidizing in a 2-light, a 3-light, a 4-light, a 5-light, as you're getting anywhere else. So I'd like to see them reshape that plan, make it fully mixed income. Make you, if they want to do micro units, then I guess they can, but make those market rate micro units and start building truly affordable housing in all of the lights. Not just say that there's this separate building over there where we're going to do that sort of thing.
Councilwoman Justice.
You know, I absolutely support many of the programs we have right now to increase affordable housing in this city. And I do not see the project that we are talking about very specifically as addressing those needs. I will tell you that the first and the biggest thing that we can do on affordable housing is making sure that we are taking the now 9,000 vacant and abandoned properties that we have throughout our city, getting them rehabbed, and getting people into those homes. Because if I were a young mother, if I were a working family, if I were someone who had a job outside of downtown Kansas City, no, a 300-square-foot, $700 unit would not work for me. But if I had just graduated from college and was interested in living downtown and maybe not having a car because my job was downtown, I might consider that. And I think that's an opportunity that should be available, but it can't be the only opportunity. There has to be a whole variety of things. And if you ask me, the fastest way to solve our affordable housing problem in this city is to take advantage of what we have right now, which is amazing public-private partnerships, where we are actually taking abandoned properties, suing to get them back on the tax rolls, working with small developers, working with CDCs, working with folks who have been doing this for years in the private sector to make sure that they're rehabbed and that they're safe and that they are solving the needs of families. And that's where we need to focus our affordable housing dollars right now.
Okay, different topic. Kansas City is the country's 38th largest city based on 2018 census figures, and yet it ranks as the 21st largest when it comes to public debt. The city is $1.4 billion in the hole, according to one analysis I saw. You know, our debt burden stands at $9,100 per taxpayer. How big a concern is that to you, and what would be the goal of your administration when it comes to reducing Kansas City's debt, Councilman Lucas?
You know, I think we need to continue to address a few key areas. There's a conversation going on right now about pensions. How do we make sure that we're actually adequately funding our long-term pension planning, I think, is key. One of the issues, I think, connected with pension planning was that there were several years where we didn't adequately fund. And so we got behind, and so we start to exacerbate and increase our debt. I think that's a step one. Step two is that we need to make sure we're not spending on things that, in my view, are either wasteful or that we can't afford. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the proposal to build a new Kansas City, Missouri jail. And for those of you who live in Kansas City and Jackson County, it's the darndest thing, right? There's a plan to build a new Jackson County jail, which will cost tens of millions of dollars. And Kansas City, Missouri is saying, let's build our own jail for $30 or $40 million. We don't have that money. We don't have that money, and we have too much need on lots of other things. So there's going to be the combination of addressing the spending that we need, paying our folks their wages, paying fair wages, frankly, at City Hall, addressing pensions long-term, but then also not conducting long-term wasteful spending that we do not need. We should not be issuing debt to fund another jail, which is the least economic development thing that you can possibly do in a city. And so that's the sort of way I want to look at it in every project, seeing what is the return long-term. If there is no positive return, we don't need to be in that business.
Do you have a goal for what you want the overall debt to be at the end of a four-year Quentin Lucas term as mayor?
I mean, sure, my life goal would be zero. I'm not sure if we
can
get
you,
to it.
Can you guarantee that?
No, I won't even tell you. I've been accused of being untrustworthy, so I'll just say no. I cannot guarantee zero. What I will say is that's a direction we need to strive towards. And how do we do that? We do real impactful, right? Addressing our pension crisis, right? Looking at a reform there. We actually are impactful in making sure that when we're considering projects, we're thinking about the long-term debt obligation to the taxpayers, and we're seeing if it's the sort of project we need. In every council vote, frankly, and here's my big thing, Steve, I won't talk too long, right? We need to actually look at where the money's coming from when we introduce these ordinances. Every week we have lots of ordinances that are purely aspirational. Currently we have a $400 million bike plan resolution, right? We need to make sure that we have some idea where that money's gonna come from. We can't just keep passing things and not looking at the budget impact. I think that's how we get closer to zero, and I think that needs to be our aspiration.
Councilwoman Justice, will you guarantee zero debt at the end of a four-year Jolie Justice administration?
No, I will not. That would be one of the most reckless and irresponsible promises that anyone could make. And here's what I have to say about our debt. You can look at our city and our debt, and one of the things that makes me incredibly happy is that, unlike some other cities, we've been able to keep our credit rating very high. And we've been able to do that because we've done some very responsible things that other cities have not done. And one of those things was creating our five-year business plan. And one of those things that we have seen as a city now is when we are having proposals that are put in front of us and we're having to make decisions on whether to spend money on a project, we take a look at that and we say, is it in the plan? And if it's not in the plan, here's the good news. We have an amazing director of finance right now, and he's going to be very mad for me calling him out by name. But Randy Landis comes in front of the finance committee and he says to us, look at this. You have not put this in your plan. This is going to increase the debt by this amount, and this is not part of what you've budgeted moving forward. And you're going to have to make hard decisions 1 year down the line, 2 year down the line, 3 years down the line to make sure that you do that. Those are incredibly important voices because we are listening and we are hearing. I was very shocked very recently. I guess it's been probably almost a year ago now. This has been a long year for all of us. But our director of finance brought to us a list of all of the kind of quote-unquote unfunded mandates that the city council has given to the city manager, where we have said to him, go find money for this project. And it was reaching almost $90 million. And at some point, you have to be able to say no. And one of the things that I've learned in my leadership is that you have to be able to look at someone, even though they have a great idea, and say no. I do it on a regular basis. But what I've learned is you have to do that at a rate people can absorb. Because the reality is that if you say no all the time, you're going to miss out on opportunities. So one of the things that I would propose moving forward is, yes, we absolutely have to take a look at the pension liability, make sure that we are keeping our pension obligations to the men and women who have worked for this city, but that we are also moving forward in a smart manner so that our credit ratings don't start to drop. Number two, when our director of finance stands up and says, this is not part of the five-year business plan, we have to have a tough conversation and say no. And that's the type of leadership you can expect from me.
You're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 FM KCUR, Kansas City's public radio station, and a live debate at Union Station between our two candidates for mayor. You know, mayors in this community tend to be beloved because they leave behind a legacy of significant capital improvements of one kind or another. Dick Berkeley had the expansion of Bartle Hall, Manuel Cleaver had Brush Creek and the American Jazz Museum, Kay Barnes had the Sprint Center in downtown Kansas City, Sly James has his new airport terminal and the downtown convention hotel. Quentin Lucas, what would your capital improvement legacy be? What do you want it to be?
It won't be something that the city owns. It will be having rehabilitated thousands of houses and created more opportunities for people to have safe, quality, and affordable housing in Kansas City. That's my big goal.
Jolie?
Mine will be taking the momentum that we've seen under all of that, everything you just described, and translating it into something that's felt at the neighborhood level. So that means every single neighborhood has housing opportunities combined with transportation options and the retail and amenity things and vital community services that are needed. And that means sidewalks, that means bus service, that means jobs, and that means right in your own neighborhood, no matter where your neighborhood is within the 319 square miles of the city.
Do either one of you want to replace City Manager Troy Schulte, Jolie?
I do not.
Quentin?
I do not.
Let's turn to crime. Tick off three things you want to do to lower the violent crime rate in this community. Obviously, a pressing concern, an ongoing concern. What do you want to do, and do you want to hire more police officers to get that job done? Jolie, I'll start with you on this one.
You had a great conversation yesterday with Gene Peters-Baker, our prosecutor, and we were talking about how other cities have been able to drive down violent crime. A lot of folks think that that's impossible, that you can't drive down violent crime, but you can. And so one of the things that I would do first and foremost is make sure that we are continuing what has started, which is sending our Kansas City Police Department with our prosecutor's department to cities that have seen that success. The most recent trip was to the city of Tampa. If you look at Tampa's numbers 10 years ago, they were in the exact same space that we're in. And they were able to drive their crime numbers down. And they did it through things like precision policing. They did it through innovative programs, making sure that you are addressing the systemic issues that that lead to crime, but also making sure that when you have an individual who has committed a crime, that you're doing everything in your power to make sure that there are no repeat crimes from that individual. And that's not an easy thing to do. And so I would do very specifically the following things. Number one, I would make sure that we are smart on crime. And I would do that by making sure we're funding our specialty courts, which means addiction and mental health services. I would continue the work that we're doing with our social workers within our Kansas City Police Department and the amazing work that's happening at the Prosecutor's Department right now, because I will tell you, the homicide detectives in Kansas City are spread so thin right now that we don't have the time that we need to make sure that we're addressing those gunshot victims that did not result in homicide, and making sure that we close those cases as well.
Councilwoman, do you have any sense of why Kansas City can't seem to get its arms around this problem? All the things that you said Tampa is doing, arguably, Kansas City, Missouri has done and done over and over again, innovative program after supposedly innovative program. Why can't we get our arms around this thing?
You know, I think one of the things, Steve, is that we start an innovative program and then we stop the innovative program. And a lot of times, that's because we have changes in leadership, changes in philosophy, and that's okay. But just because you stop something doesn't mean you should just give up. We can't say that Kansas City is somehow different and that's why we're not getting it right. Instead, we need to do what we're doing right now, which is work with the Kansas City Police Department. The thing I'm most excited about being the next mayor of Kansas City is sitting on that police board and working with our police chief to make sure that we have more neighborhood police officers so that we're not just responding to calls on a crisis-by-crisis basis, but that we're building the trust within the community that's necessary, that we are working on the systemic issues. If you think that we can just address this while not addressing housing and transportation, you're wrong. All of these things are together, and that's why you have to have a balanced approach and moving that forward. And we can do that, and we just have to make sure that the conversation continues and that the action continues, because we have started this, and we cannot keep starting and stopping.
You know, Jolie, one more point here. Some folks in Kansas City think it's imperative that the city regain control of its police department. The city of Kansas City is the only city in the country with a state-controlled police department. Is that part of your agenda? Does that need to be in this mix, or is that a fight for another day?
No, it's not a fight for another day. What I will tell you is this. I have always been firmly a supporter of a police board. I absolutely am firmly planted on the fact that we need a police board, because I do not want a city council who can control 100% the police department so that those with the most political power on the city council can, you know, garner resources from the police department in their neighborhood above and beyond other neighborhoods. I am absolutely open to the conversation about who appoints that police board, because I want to make sure that we have a police board that understands the community, that understands the issues that we have, and that is more accountable to the community and not to Jefferson City. So as long as we maintain a police board, I am absolutely comfortable with having talks and immediately moving forward. As all of you know, the only way to do that, though, is a change of law in Jefferson City.
So you're saying the mayor should be appointing the members of the police board?
I am open to that. I am open to having the conversation about who appoints the police board. What I would say is this. I don't think it needs to be Jefferson City. That doesn't make sense to me. As long as there is a police board, let's have a community conversation about who appoints it, and let's make sure we get it right.
And just to be go on here one step further, if it's not the mayor, who if that's not part of this equation, who would appoint the police
board? Well, I mean, obviously we could do a mayor and council. We could do an elected board. Other cities have boards. This is not a unique situation. Let's figure out what's working best across the country, and let's take from that, and then let's have a conversation about how we move it forward, because it will take a state law to fix that. Of course, the state law also says, Steve, I don't know if you know this, that it's only cities that are 700,000 and less, so maybe if we just grow our population to 700,001, the issue will be resolved immediately.
Quentin Lucas, your plan for controlling violent crime in Kansas City.
As we stated, there are a lot of different steps, and I will agree that you need to do the kind of broader community things, addressing housing, job opportunities, et cetera. But I don't usually like when people start with that, because that means they're not actually saying we need to come up with an answer now, right? Every murder is a tragedy, every shooting, every domestic violence incident, and we need to try our best to reduce them. So these are the ways that I think we can do it. One, we do need to invest in mental health. and adequately invest in mental health. It is a public health crisis in our city, in our country, really. And I think what we need to do in connection with that is make sure not only that we are adequately funding and not raiding our health levy. By the way, thank you, voters, for creating a health levy that we sometimes use for any number of different uses. We need to make sure that it's actually going things to things like funding mental health in our city, helping to support our safety net hospitals, helping to make sure that those who have suffered from some level of trauma can get ongoing treatment and counseling and not just feel the need to retaliate. I think a second part of what we need to do is what we've discussed, and that's neighborhood policing. I've done 3 ride-alongs with the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department now. On each of them, our whole time was just being reactionary, right? We were going from Independence Avenue to the stadium area and then driving back quickly to Van Brunt, and we didn't have time to process the situation. One call, we were at a shooting scene on Independence Avenue going to a domestic violence incident off of Blue Ridge. We didn't get to the domestic violence incident in time, and everybody had left. Right, that's a travesty to me. What I'd like to see is us better deploying our officers and making sure that they're assigned to sectors, to neighborhoods, so they actually do have the opportunity to get to know the drug house, perhaps, but to also get to know the people that are around, so that we don't have neighborhoods like Santa Fe that are calling my office all the time and saying, Councilman Lucas, right, we have this ongoing issue with prostitution, drug abuse and addiction, etc., and so that we can make sure we're getting social worker services where they need to be. That brings me to another step. We need to not just have programs that we temporarily fund, get a newspaper story about, and then move on, but we need to permanently fund them. The social worker program we're all bragging about is actually just a short-term contract, right? We haven't actually made these folks full-time, long-term employees with KCPD. We need to reverse that. That's something, frankly, I want to do now. And I think from day one, we would say this is a key and important part of the program. We're not just moving around. The way you avoid that whole change in process all the time with new administrations is if you actually start to permanently fund these things and make sure that we're investing in social workers, our neighborhood policing officers, public health, and mental health. Those are going to be key. One final point. I got to go to Southeast High School last week and visited with their conflict resolution program, which is outstanding. Right? Something that's allowing children that are dealing with real issues, some of them that were getting in fights and were getting state charges, right, who are now actually having the opportunity to go through something akin to a mediation type thing and avoiding charges and learning how to actually resolve conflicts without fighting, without picking up a gun. Right? These are the sorts of things that we as a city need to support more often. These are the funds we need to apply for through the combat tax, right, to make sure that we're actually supporting these long-term and resolving issues in our city before they start.
You know, Jolie, one more thing on crime, and again, a question from our audience here. Setting aside law enforcement, you know, police and prosecutors, what can the broader community, the business community, faith institutions, et cetera, do to address our violent crime crisis?
You know, one of the things we need the assistance with is substantive criminal justice reform. We have started it at the state level, and I was in the middle of it. We had a criminal code rewrite. We had the Justice Reinvestment Act. And 3 weeks ago, or 4 weeks ago now, we heard from the Vera Institute that it's actually working. That we have seen in Missouri our prison population declining faster than any other state in the nation. Well, why is that important? Because number one, we know that when someone commits a crime and they go through one of our specialty court programs, they have about a 9 to 10% chance that they're going to reoffend and commit another crime. If they go through supervised probation and parole, they're going to have about a 16 to 18% chance of reoffending. But if you spend 1 day in the Department of Corrections in the state of Missouri, you have over a 50% chance of reoffending. So we are spending more money and we are less safe by locking people up. And so one of the things we need from the business community is to step up and start lobbying at both the state and national level, and making sure that we are continuing down that road, that we are making decisions today that will make us safer tomorrow. These are things that we need that are a fundamental base for Kansas City. We are implementing a lot of those things here at the local level, and we will continue to do it because you have a mayor and a city council who are ready to do that. Both of us have talked about the importance of local criminal justice reform, and we have put some things in place, but there is no question that we need your help at the state and the federal level continuing this conversation.
Quentin.
Yeah, a few different things. I think when we talk about criminal justice reform, I want to see dramatic change. One of the things I proposed is actually a fallout of what the voters did. Several years ago, Kansas City, Missouri voters, by a number of about 75% to 25%, voted to, in essence, decriminalize marijuana. I think that that was only a half step. What we want to do, what I want to do, and what I will do as mayor, because mayors actually have a pardon power, is to pardon everyone who's been charged under a municipal marijuana possession offense.
How many people are you talking about there?
It'd be lots. I haven't actually run the numbers yet. Mm-hmm. But there are lots of people, men and women, who are walking around with those convictions now. And while society, I guess, has moved on and said that marijuana possession of small amounts is okay for people, these are folks that are living with that stigma every day. And that stigma has negative impacts on their life thereafter. So I think if we're talking about real reform, it's not about a conversation to me. It's about actually saying, how do we get rid of that thing that has been an impediment for people for so long? That's what the mayor can do. I'd encourage Mayor James to do it. He can take my issue, right? But nevertheless, I think that's one big step. I think another thing that we need to do when we're talking about the business community's involvement, you know, honestly, business community, I don't want you guys to hire lobbyists. You have enough of them, right? I want you. I want you to mentor people. I want you to hire people, right? The solution for me is not in Jefferson City. I mean, we can look at every week of some of the fascinating things that go on down there, right? I actually want our business leadership to not, and it's not just about money. You know, I grew up without, I've never met my father in my life. Right? People who made a difference in my life were those that I got to see as mentors, were those that I got to see, wow, they're really doing something. I want to be like that guy, black and white. And I want to see more of the business community involved in our public schools, right? I want to see more of the business community actually mentoring people. And I sure as heck want to see more of the business community hiring those people who need second chances, right? How can we make sure we're looking out for those folks? That's what I think real involvement means.
You're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR, live debate between the Kansas City candidates for mayor, the election June 18th, coming up in just about 10, 12 days here. There's a new group in the city, Kansas City Tenants, that is advocating for a tenants' bill of rights that covers topics like rent affordability and evictions. I'm wondering, do you support a tenants' bill of rights? How would you come up with the tens of millions of dollars necessary to guarantee that every person in Kansas City has access to a truly and permanently affordable, accessible, and safe home, as the group calls for? Councilwoman Justice?
I do support a tenants' bill of rights and have had the opportunity to talk to KC tenants about that and look forward to continued conversations on the subject. When it comes to affordable housing, we obviously, and we've talked about this here in this debate today, have seen over the last 100 years in our city intentional policies that have led to a lack of affordability and a lack of safe housing for everybody in our city. So one of the things that I would say is, moving forward, when you ask the specific question, how do you come up with the tens of millions of dollars? Yes. Well, you start slow, and you start with getting that tenant's bill of rights. Because one of the things that I know is that when we're talking about affordable housing, it's not just about creation of new housing. It's not just about preserving, like I talked about, on the neighborhood by neighborhood basis, and making sure that we're getting vacant and abandoned houses that are habitable again. It's also about stability. And that's why one of the things that I've been doing for the last 20 years as a lawyer who provides free legal services is making sure that we are providing free legal services and assistance to folks who are facing eviction. We need to make sure that we as a city are stepping up and doing that as well, because if we can stabilize individuals in their existing homes, that helps people age in place. That helps students stop moving from school to school to school. That helps the school itself. These are things we can do, but we have to focus on that stabilization piece, and I would absolutely continue to do that work as mayor of Kansas City.
Julie, your colleague on the council, Scott Wagner, has proposed what many have described as a modest property tax increase to begin to generate funds for affordable housing in Kansas City. Can you back that?
You know, I'm not ready to back it at this time, and here's why. I've also heard about some other community conversations about other types of taxes that would fund housing. I had a conversation with the Kansas City Public Schools yesterday about their need for a modest property tax, looking at issues relating to schools. I need to have a conversation when it comes to tax policy, not taking one issue at a time, but I need to do it looking at the totality of everything in front of us. And so I'm not ready to support that specific tax at this time.
A tenant's bill of rights, Quentin Lucas.
I support the Tenants Bill of Rights. I stand with it, and, you know, it's interesting in these conversations. You know, I wasn't practicing law 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I was living in a pretty slum-like bit of housing off of 59th and Indiana. So I know what this is like. I know what it's like when you don't have heat that works, when your hot water tank doesn't work, when you're trying to get ready for school and all of that. And I know the challenge that can create for a bunch of people. And so that's why I'm actually proud. The councilwoman's criticized me for this. I'm proud to have passed an ordinance that, frankly, doesn't give enough money to housing, but is saying that we need a $75 million housing trust fund. The reason I said that was because, no, don't start modestly. If we start modestly, we continue with the exact same housing policy we've had in Kansas City since the Carter administration. And what is that? That's been to say, hey, let's take federal government dollars, let's spend them on some projects, let's kind of call that a day. Right? What I think we really need to do is say, how can we be, particularly as the federal government and state governments continue to cut the amount of money that's going to support housing and other core quality of life issues, how can we fill that gap? How can we make sure people have good access to housing? So I'm proud of that $75 million trust fund, and I took some umbrage at the criticism because the councilwoman supports a $400 million bike lane plan. I think the $75 million is actually a modest start. The question you might ask next, Steve, is, where does it come from? You know, we've actually approved a lot of taxes that help us go to these sorts of things. I've taken criticism by saying that we have an 8-cent sales tax. I'm not saying we steal the money from it, but I say going through the regular application process, we try to prioritize projects that are building housing and doing rehab and building multifamily in the core of the city, right? In the urban core, where we need access to housing every day. And so I think those are actually key and important steps that we can do to truly support the Tenants' Bill of Rights. Everybody running for office will say, hey, I like it, right? But what they're not going to start doing is saying, I'm going to make this a budget priority over something else. It's time that we have a mayor that is going to say that. This is, in many ways, my most important issue. And this is something that I will stick to. And this is something that I think we need to pass, regardless of who's mayor next.
You know, we had a note yesterday from Katie asking about the future of the American Jazz Museum in the 18th and Vine District. She wanted to know, Councilman Lucas, what you've learned from the museum's struggles, and do you take any responsibility for it? She points out that as 3rd District Councilman, you represented the museum the last 4 years when it was forced to confront, you know, so many challenges, including a failed and costly jazz festival that the city had to bail out. What about it?
Yeah, so threshold point, I take responsibility for everything, good and bad, that has happened at the city, that's happened in particularly the community I'm honored to represent over the last 4 years, ranging from homicides to 18th and Vine to the housing crisis that still continues to exist. I was elected to change things. We haven't changed enough, and that's why I'm doing this now, to make sure we can change more. A particular problem with the American Jazz Museum from before was that politicians do not belong on boards of these city-supported institutions. I realized that almost immediately upon being appointed to the American Jazz Museum Board. Because was I appointed because I know a lot about music? No. Do I know a lot about museums? No.
What's wrong with jazz?
I love jazz, okay. Right? Okay. I don't know how to run a museum, okay. Right? What we should be looking for are board members who have a talent for fundraising, board members, and I guess I don't, right? Board members who have a talent for actually building these types of institutions, and we didn't. And by the way, that's the entire story with 18th and Vine. I think we need to trust folks that are investing in that area. We need to trust businesses. We need to trust the community far more than just saying, because you're a 3rd District Council member, you should get some control and basically pick winners and losers and who gets involvement in the district. That will be long-term problematic, and it needs to change.
Let me give Julie, I got about 40 seconds left and I got to wrap things up, Julie.
Well, speaking specifically to 18th and Vine, I would like everybody at this point to go to 18th and Vine today and take a look at what we have done as a city and how it is starting to make a massive difference. We have art gallery. We have new restaurants. We have new retail. These are things that we have been hoping and looking for the last 20 years, and this is something that I'm excited is finally happening.
This would be a great time to give our two candidates for Kansas City Mayor a big round of applause for a very thoughtful conversation. Our thanks to our candidates, our thanks to the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce for hosting us here today at Union Station, and thank you for being a terrific audience. You can give yourselves a big round of applause, too. You did a great job. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.